You're listening to JerryPark.com, the Coliseum of Combat Sports.
Usually when Large graces us with his presence here at Jerry Park, we start sparring right away about a whole host of different boxing topics. Well, this time, while we do have a lot to talk about, we're going to kick things off in a most foreign place for our resident sweet scientist. But before we get to that, Large, my man, welcome back to the park.
Oh, yeah, it's good to be here, Franchise. Always good to be at Jerry Park.
So, like I said, and likewise, great to have you here. This is strange territory for you. Obviously, Floyd Mayweather getting involved in WWE, and since you keep your finger on the pulse of the boxing scene for Nomas as well as the sporting blog, you've been watching Monday Night Raws, and I'm getting weird emails from you breaking down, you know, the Ric Flair storyline, and I'm almost afraid to tell you that all this is scripted because it seems as though you're getting so into everything that it's a beautiful thing to watch. So I wanted to ask you, you know, the last couple of weeks you've been checking out Monday Night Raw. What are your thoughts on the current wrestling scene?
Well, you know, as I told you before, it's been a while since I've checked into wrestling. When I was a kid, I knew, to me, wrestling was Spectrum Wrestling. That's what, you know, like, if I never said the words wrestling without the word Spectrum in front of it. It was just like, oh, did you see Spectrum Wrestling? It's all the pro wrestling that we saw in the Philly area came out of the Spectrum, and it was always billed as Spectrum Wrestling. So I think the last time that I was really current with wrestling, Bob Backlund was a very important figure in the whole scene. He was one of my wrestling heroes as a kid. Now, I'm a long way from an expert, but I gotta say I really like the Big Show. He seems like he should be a star to me. Particularly watching last night, I couldn't help but see that Chris Jericho seems to me like he's emblematic of everything that's wrong with wrestling, as far as I'm concerned, where
really?
It's gone.
Why is that? Because he's actually a big favorite for a lot of like the hardcore fans. Why do you say that? I'm interested to hear your point of view.
Well, I'm such a dilettante. What the hell do I know? But my main feeling about him is that he's too good looking. I don't really want a pro wrestler ever to be good looking. And as soon as he is, it really bothers me, you know, And my memory of the wrestlers of my youth that I really dug, they were all really big, outrageously ugly. It seems like one thing I will say about Jericho is that he doesn't seem like he's all roided up, which is nice. But there was a certain kind of like, there was a certain point at which it seemed like the wrestling star got very Hollywood in a way, you know, That's just my sense watching it from afar. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but they started to seem very slick. They started to seem very, the roids came in, and it was some weird, you know, kind of like, is he a wrestler? Is he an underwear model? And I want the guys to be ugly, and I want them to be weird. I was watching last night, and I saw Umaga come out, and I was like, all right, now we're talking. that's my kind of guy right there. Ugly and weird, and Big Show, I just think he's got it all. He's got the perfect look, you know. He does the like I'm crazy and I'm angry look really well, which I think, you know, that's an important look for a wrestler to master, is that I'm crazy look, and Big Show's really got that down. He's got a good voice too.
It's interesting that you say that about the Big Show, because for a while he was mired in this sort of comedic role. He actually appeared on the first Saturday Night Live that The Rock appeared on, and that sort of kickstarted his whole movie career. And Big Show, in a couple of times, stole the scene because he was so funny and was able to improv so well. And then they put him in this comedic role. But you're right, he's a lot better as the mean giant that is able to kick everyone's ass. And there is even some talk that that nasty right hand punch that he delivered to Chris Jericho actually really nailed him quite hard. And nowadays,
I was impressed with that. I got to say, they showed the replays a lot, and though obviously he was pulling his punch in a certain way, but when you got a guy running into you that quickly, and you know, and the fist coming forward, it it's going to hurt no matter what.
It's a really weird time for wrestling because everyone's wondering now what's real, what's not. Like, was the big melee last week between Floyd's people and the WWE guys, was that real? Was the initial punch real? Did it break his nose? All this stuff that usually we just kind of watch the show and then, you know, go to bed. But now it's like I'm trying to analyze, you know, what is real, what is not. But I want to ask you because, a couple of days ago.
You think it was real when Mr. McMahon busted open Ric Flair's head? I don't know. That blood was pretty flowing pretty hard.
Well, if it was actually due to the impact, because I mean Ric Flair is notorious for, you know, blading, which is how most, contrary to popular belief, a lot of people will say it's, you know, the ketchup and all that crap, but it's actually them taking a razor blade out of their boot or their trunks and cutting their forehead open, and that would be what would, you know, initiate the blood or ignite the blood. I'm not sure if what McMahon did, but that's an interesting you know, talking point for us, because you're sitting there and, like you said, you probably haven't watched a full episode of any type of wrestling program for many years, and you're watching a 60-something-year-old almost billionaire wrestle or fight or whatever a 50-something-year-old former wrestling legend. What is going through your mind when you're watching this, and do you have to be scratching your head as to, you know, who the hell considers this entertainment?
No. I was digging it. I didn't watch the whole. I didn't watch the whole thing. You know, obviously, I wanted to see the Floyd stuff. But when I saw that Ric Flair, I got to be honest. I didn't know Ric Flair was still wrestling. I think maybe I sort of knew that, but I had no idea that he was still on the scene. And so I thought, Jesus. You know, I mean, Ric Flair goes back to my day. You know, back to when I was a kid, and so I couldn't believe it. McMahon. I certainly knew, you know, peripherally that McMahon got involved in Bounce. You know, it's funny for me remembering McMahon. I really remember to me it'll always be the WWF. You know, I still always think of it as the WWF. And I really remember when McMahon was first really taking the helm and kind of starting to posit himself as a character more and more, you know, but I certainly was out of paying any attention to the whole universe before McMahon actually started to step into the ring. It's funny too, because McMahon also, I don't remember him being a nearly as big as he is now.
Yes.
And one has to wonder how that happened for him. Probably just a lot of exercise and proper diet. But I dug McMahon's. I really liked the McMahon Ric Flair bout. I dug McMahon's look, you know, it was very Tyson. It had a Tyson vibe about it. You know, I'm a workman. I'm not going in here to fool around. I'm going in here to do a job with the gloves. You know, like I like that working man kind of vibe that he had going. Definitely the craziest part of the night to me was McMahon's performance. You know, when he's announcing that he's going to do the whole thing. And he starts off with, "What would I do?" I mean, that straight out of like children's theater. You know what I mean? It was just so comically over the top that I really enjoyed that with all the faces and everything. So I liked it. And seeing Ric Flair in there, I didn't know whether to feel bad for the guy or really dig him. But it was funny. It was funny. McMahon keep going under the ring. It's like, what's he going to pull out next? You know, kept waiting for him to pull out a chainsaw. You know? There must be a chainsaw under there somewhere.
Well, I'm such a
neophyte. I you know, when he pulled the table out, I was like, what the hell is he going to do with the table? Is he going to hit him with the table?
That's why I like this so much. It's because this was all so new to you. And for someone like myself, for anyone that watches Raw on a weekly basis and all the pay-per-views and everything, you know what's going to happen.
The table comes out quite a few times.
Yes, the table comes out. There was no question that Ric Flair was winning because we knew that, you know, he's going to wrestle at WrestleMania. That Ric Flair was losing, excuse me, because we knew he can't retire because he's got the WrestleMania bout. So it's almost a pleasure for me to see someone just watching it, not knowing all the insider crap and just, like, you know, enjoying it for what it is. And that's entertainment. Yeah. And the last time,
I have to confess, I did have an inkling that Ric Flair wasn't going to lose. I did manage to divine that, but I enjoyed it nevertheless.
The last time we spoke, It was just at the beginning of the Mayweather entrance into the world of wrestling. I was very excited about it. You were excited about it. You were appreciating what he was doing out there. And somewhere in between there, the whole thing kind of sputtered a bit. And now kind of getting back into the rhythm, just less than 2 weeks out before WrestleMania 24. Although I was very disappointed that he wasn't on Raw last night. I think 2 weeks before the biggest match of, you know, that is being hyped in WrestleMania, he should have been there. But nevertheless, it seems to have been to have a lot more interest, especially for the casual fan now that they've switched Floyd into this heel role. I'm curious, as you said that you were going to plan on watching it, you know, 4 or 5 weeks ago. Are you still planning on watching it? Are you still interested in seeing how he will perform at WrestleMania 24? And what do you think of the whole evolution of his character in WWE?
Well, you know, it's funny. I've been talking to you about this, but I've written a pretty big piece about that for Slate that I submitted about, which is more about Floyd Mayweather than WWE, but certainly what's happened with him in going in them trying to perpetrate him as a face and having to fall back on him as a heel plays a big role in what I'm talking about in that piece. I'm still interested. The main thing that's difficult for me is to assess, because obviously I write about this stuff, and so I want to write about it. And for me, in terms of covering boxing, it's really unique. And I think I have a unique take on it, because it seems like nobody, even Thomas Hauser writing about it, like everybody really, even when people are writing about, even when people are trying to write about it in a certain reality assessment way, there's an undertone that they really can't stand that it's even happening. And so that's the one unique thing I think I bring to the table, is that I'm into it. I think it's cool. I have no beef with Floyd doing it. It doesn't make me angry. It doesn't make me feel like boxing has been, you know, has been dissed in some essential way. But it's hard for me to tell as a writer, you know, if I was just a big boxing fan, what would my interest be? Obviously, I'm going to watch WrestleMania because I want to write about it. Would I do that? And I'm interested in this question. You know, I'm interested in the guys. It's something I should definitely put out there over at Nomos. But my sense is that the answer to that is no. To be honest, my sense is that the boxing guys, at least that I deal with at Nomos, I think. Yeah, most of them are, you know, there are a few that are wrestling heads, but for the most part, they're anti-wrestling. And particularly the guys who are pretty serious about boxing, I don't think that they're going to, you know, I think they're like, this is some bull crap I'll read about it in the newspaper.
Okay, so I pretty much what I expected. And obviously, the thing that I always liked about you is that you had this open mind to it, and unlike some of the other journalists. But to be honest, I really don't think that it has generated as much controversy, if that's the best word to use, as I would have imagined when everyone found out about Floyd coming into WWE. And maybe that is, you know, that says something about how popular Floyd is as a mainstream star, but who knows? And you know, you talk about Floyd and everything that he's done in the boxing ring, and there's no shortage of things for us to talk about. So let's move into your forte, the world of boxing, the sweet science. And this past weekend, Pacquiao Marquez 2, you know, if some people thought that Marquez Vasquez 3 was the fight of the year, well, I'd like to hear what they think about this bout, because once again, an unbelievable bout, a split decision victory for Manny Pacquiao. Obviously, you watched it, and now there's some, you know, discussion as to whether or not there should be a third fight, and even a little bit of controversy about the bout just a few days afterwards. What are your initial thoughts on Pacquiao's big victory on Saturday night?
Well, you know, as I've written, I'm surprised by the depth of the controversy, to be honest. I'm trying to remember, because things get turned over so quickly. It's hard for me quite to remember. I know that there was some dispute from Marquez Vasquez. Marquez was certainly disappointed and made out that he very clearly won the fight. But I don't think that quite grew into the controversy that this did. And I feel like, you know, Rafael Marquez, the younger Marquez, in his fight with Vasquez had as much of a beef to make. You know, I think there was as much of a controversy to be made there as there was in this fight. So I'm not sure why this thing got so out of hand, other than that they were so angry. But it does seem like a lot of people really feel like Marquez won the fight cleanly. I myself, I can't fathom that. I did score for Pacquiao. You know, I put my scorecard on Nomas. I had him winning by 1 point. It was 114, 113. I had him 2 going into the final round. I thought that Marquez needed a knockdown to tie it. And it seemed pretty clear to me what it was, which was that each fighter won 6 rounds and Pacquiao had a knockdown and it gave him a 1 point victory. So I felt pretty confident about that. I actually felt better about that decision than I did about Vasquez Marquez, you know, which is a fight where each fighter knocked the other guy down once. I also thought that Vasquez won that fight. I was good with that, but if one of them had to be scored a draw, I think I would have preferred that it be Vasquez Marquez. I was more confident that Manny Pacquiao deserved to win this fight. So I didn't expect him. You know, I think a lot of press was generated by the post-fight press conference, which got kind of ugly. Bob Arum got pretty angry. Marquez's people were angry. They made some allusions to the fact that a judge had been changed. They really seemed to go out of their way to say, hey, something crooked happened here. And I understand that they're hurting, and this was a big fight for Juan Manuel Marquez. I mean, the guy's career has been something of a disappointment, and he's a phenomenally talented boxer. He's had to take a backseat to the other Mexicans. Everybody knows that. He didn't take the Pacquiao rematch when he should have. Everybody knows that. And his career has suffered greatly because of it. And so obviously this fight meant an enormous amount to him. So I understand how disappointed he is, but I am pretty disappointed myself with the way his whole team has behaved in the aftermath of the fight, because I got no problem with somebody scoring that fight for Marquez. You know, a lot of those rounds are very tough to score. You could debate back and forth. Do I think there's a good argument to say that Marquez won the fight? Yes, I do. You know, I'm open to hearing it. I'd be happy to have it with somebody and make my case for why Pacquiao won. But to go beyond that and say, hey, it was so obvious that I won this fight that something was wrong with what happened, that's just malarkey to me. I mean, I don't think anybody could watch that fight and say, oh, they stole it from Marquez. You know, this was not a Chavez-Whitaker scene, you know. And so on that aspect of the whole thing, I'm pretty unhappy, because I think that what happens with these stories is that people that don't pay attention to boxing, you know, what radiates outward only is that there's another judging controversy. And judging controversies are one of the things, and the fact that there have been legitimate judging controversies, very ugly judging situations in the past, it's one of the things that people pull out when they want to make out that boxing is a very ugly and untoward sport and shouldn't exist at all. You know, people that want to kill boxing, judging controversy is always in the top 5 things they want to bring up. And I don't really think after a fight that's been this great, you know, I mean, that was a great fight to me. For me, it was better than Marquez Vasquez. And at a fight that was that great and should be the kind of thing that afterwards we're all celebrating, for it to get dragged through the mud unfairly, I think, well, it's bad for full sport. So I'm pretty unhappy about that.
Is it possible that all this talk after the fight of, you know, controversy and scoring and all that is just a ploy by Marquez's camp to really force the issue to get that third bout? Because, you know, right after reading some articles online, people were saying, well, nothing will really be established or decided with a third bout. It seems as though a lot of people felt that, you know, 2 is enough for this one. And now they realize that while Marquez had a few rough years leading up to this one and really fell down the ladder, they really want to try to get him that third bout and what comes with it, the big money.
I think that's certainly the case. Marquez is in one of those situations right now where he, you know, there's a potential for him to become You know, like the cautionary tale of Ricky Hatton. You know, look at what's going on with Ricky Hatton right now. Ricky Hatton has some other issues to deal with, but basically he fought the big fight with Floyd. He's in the center of everyone's, you know, center of public attention in the sports world. He's a huge star. I mean, he's still a huge star in England. But suddenly, you know, after he fought Floyd, he doesn't seem to want to take any of the big bouts out there, and Marquez isn't going to do that. But the point is just like, it seems like Ricky Hatton's time has come and gone, and he's going back to becoming a house fighter in Manchester, and that's a big house, you know, big house for him to fight in. But nevertheless, Marquez, I think, is probably concerned about the same situation for him. I'm not sure that this fight and the result of this fight has catapulted him to being the kind of star that he wants to be. He's a beautiful fighter. He's not an exciting fighter. You know, he doesn't have the pop to knock people out. I think any fight fan, any dedicated fight fan, is going to tell you that they love watching Juan Manuel Marquez fight. He might be the most compelling stylist fighting today. You know, in all of the things that he combines, doing well. But he does have to deal with the fact that if he gets pushed to the wayside, you know, and it's just scored, hey, you lost. You know, good night, Irene. We'll see you later. I'm going up to lightweight for Pacquiao. Well, when's Juan Manuel Marquez's next million-dollar bout? When's his next pay-per-view bout? I don't know. I don't know if he has another one coming to him. So that's certainly an issue with the disappointment. I'm not sure how much that was calculated into what they did in the post-fight presser, you know, and the type of things that were getting said. I just think that was just pure disappointment, you know, that they were just very upset about the whole. And they vented and it got kind of out of control, but it looks like Bob Arum is kind of sticking to his guns on this one. I think that they want to move Pacquiao up to 135 to take on David Diaz, get a what they think is going to be an easy fight. I'm not sure about that, but what they think is going to be a fairly easy fight, another pay per view fight for them with Pacquiao. Give the fight some distance. I think they want to establish Pacquiao at 135, so that it's clear that that's what Juan Manuel where it has to go if he wants to fight Pacquiao, because I think it's to Pacquiao's advantage if they fight again, to fight him at 135. And I think they also want, you know, some more wear and tear on Juan Manuel Marquez. Look, right now, the guys have fought, to me, two draws, basically. I thought Pacquiao won the first fight, but still, you know, both of them are pick'em fights. And that's a point that I really want to make about this, too. The second fight was effectively a draw. When you win by 1 point on one scorecard, the fight is effectively a draw. Like, there's just no other way to look at it. I know that's no consolation to Marquez's camp, but it's just a fact of the matter. I mean, look, the two guys fought an unbelievable 12 rounds, and you know, and then three arbitrarily chosen judges decide who's the winner or the loser. It's one of the, you know, it's a difficult thing to deal with boxing. It's just one of the facts of the sport that we have to live with, you know. But nevertheless, the fact that one of those judges saw Pacquiao winning by 1 point is, by, you know, it's very important, but it's by any means not the final word on the topic. And so, you know, the point being, moving forward, these guys are obviously very evenly matched fighters, and there's certainly no guarantee that Pacquiao would win a rematch. I think fighting it at 135 would give him a little bit of an advantage.
You mentioned Ricky Hatton. I was going to ask you this later on, but since you mentioned him, there's some rumor. I know he has an upcoming fight, and that's going to be it, where Manchester City plays their football matches, which should be a pretty big sort of homecoming for him after he said he's, you know, giving back to all those fans that came all the way to Las Vegas. That's going to be against Juan Lescano. But Pauly Malignaggi, there's some talks of the, you know, those two guys battling following Hatton's next bout. Do you foresee that fight ever getting signed?
I think it is signed. I mean, I can't exactly understand the terms of that deal, but I've read that too. I should ask. There's some people that I could ask to get the details of that situation, because it's like some sort of multi-fight contract. And I'm not even sure if it's within two fights. It might be three fights where Malignaggi is along that schedule of fights will meet Ricky Hatton. I mean, to be honest, it's only further proof to me of where Ricky Hatton is at. You know, I think the main thing that Ricky Hatton's fans will have to reckon with right now is he just got embarrassed by Floyd Mayweather. I mean, I felt like he was thoroughly outclassed in that fight. And now there's a fight out there for him that would be a bigger fight than the Enzo Mack fight, you know, in Britain. If Ricky Hatton fought Junior Witter right now, that thing would be Wembley Stadium. It would be gigantic. And he's not taking the fight. And the reason he's not taking it is because there's a very good chance that he would lose that fight. You know, that's not, I mean, I've really become an anti-Ricky Hatton guy, I got to say. After the whole routine that he pulled on 24/7, I'm a man's man in the pub and all that crap. And I feel like the course that he's taking with his career is anything but manly. And I can't imagine that his Manchester, you know, yabos really buy the manliness of their fighter when he's coming home to Manchester to fight, you know, a real, you know, nobody. And let me just say one more thing. You know, I wrote this, I can't remember where I wrote it exactly, but I wrote somewhere that, you know, one thing that maybe Ricky Hatton hasn't learned over there in England is that you should beware the Mexican journeymen. You know what I mean? There are a lot of Mexicans out there who can hang around for a really long time and take a lot of punishment. It's what they're known for. And, you know, more often than not, if I hear that somebody, you know, that some up-and-coming prospect lost to someone that they were supposed to beat, I think, boy, it was probably a Mexican, because those guys are not guys to take for granted and not guys to chalk up on your future fight list as certain victories. So I don't think that fight's going to be televised actually in the States, because that's the same night as the Mikkel Kessler Edison Miranda fight, which I'm sure that HBO will take. I doubt that anyone's going to pick up the Hatton unless kind of Maybe it'll go over Showtime. I don't know what the TV schedule will be, but in any case, I'm rooting for Les Cano to beat Hatton in Manchester. That'd be beautiful to see that night.
Yeah, that night actually shaping up to be a pretty huge night for combat sports. There's that bout, as you mentioned, Kessler Miranda, also UFC 84 from Las Vegas. So no shortage of great fights. And another night like that just a couple of weeks ago was, you mentioned Hey Macaronelli. There was that bout on, and then over on HBO, the Peter Maskeyev fight, and then later on was the official demise of Ken Shamrock. But everyone's loving David Hay right now, the cruiserweight from England. Obviously now it's no longer a question. He's going to be moving up to heavyweights. Who do you, you know, if you're sort of in charge of planning out David Hay's rise to the top, and you wrote a great piece about how, you know, great he will be for the heavyweight division in the sport of boxing, how would you sort of map out his rise and then eventually the man who he should fight to get that title and then hopefully unify it and be that sort of, you know, the next guy after Lennox Lewis to be the official champion? Because it seems as though no one is happy with what Vladimir Klitschko is doing is in terms of representing that division.
Yeah, well, you know, I go back and forth on my feelings about Klitschko, but, you know, I do think he's a good fighter right now. I think it's anything but certain to me that David Hay could handle Vladimir Klitschko right now, but he's certainly not a very charismatic heavyweight champion. And he took a big hit image-wise with that Ibrahimov fight. But as far as David Hay goes, look, he'll be great for the heavyweight. He'll be great for the heavyweight ranks if he can beat people, because he's got charisma, he's good looking, and he knocks people out. The heavyweights could use somebody for people to get excited about, to give some juice back to heavyweight fights. It's funny. Why was I reading this week that Joe Calzaghe came out and said that he thinks? I guess Calzaghe's connection to that is that Calzaghe's dad trains Enzo Mack, the Welshman, Macronelli, and Calzaghe came out with some sour grapes talk, saying that he thought Hay was going to have a tough time as a heavyweight. I think that David Hayes fought one fight so far as a heavyweight. He fought at 217, and what I understand about that fight was that he didn't have too much trouble. 217 is kind of what he walks around at, you know. So he hasn't even given he's got to gain some weight. You know, I would think that he wants to gain some weight. And he's a big guy. And so, you know, he's filled out pretty well, but, you know, but another 10, 12 pounds of brawn, of muscle on him doesn't seem like it's out of the question. I think he's going to need that if he wants to stand and trade with some of these guys. I would imagine that he you know, well, the night that he beat McAnally was such a good night for him because the knockout was so outstanding, you know, full house over at the O2. I mean, and then afterward he goes on his tirade against the heavyweight division. I'm coming for you, Vladimir Klitschko. Sam Peter is pathetic. All great, all exactly what he needs to do. And he mentioned Sam Peter. Sam Peter's kind of shaky bout with Jamil McLean last November, which was definitely a blow to Sam Peter's image, where he got knocked down 3 times, came back to win a decision that thought he deserved to win, but he still didn't look too good that night, that's for sure. And David Haye brought that up. I would think that Jamil McLean, if not the exact starting place, is one of the types of fighters that Haye wants to start out with. Jamil McLean, I think, would be a good opponent for him because I think that, well, I mean, I guess they'd be nervous about that because Jamil McLean can punch. But, you know, I think David Haye, if he starts going in with some of these, with Peter, Klitschko's got to get a sense of what a heavyweight punch, what a real heavyweight punch feels like. Because one thing about David Haye, and it's going to help him in his career along the line, but it's not that hard to hit that guy. You know, he gets billed as a slick boxer. And he moves well, but he's a little too used to his punches being so much heavier than his opponent's that he fights with his hands down a lot, and he's pretty easy to counter. Even McAnally was getting off on some counters against him early on. So I would think that David Haye would, I think it'd be a big mistake to throw that guy in there with the Klitschkos and the Sam Peters right away. Let's put it that way. Maybe take him trying to get that Ruslan Chagaev belt. You know, maybe try and get one of the minor belts. Maybe aim for that first, just to become a real player on the scene. But my one concern with him is that they'll try and capitalize on the press that he's got right now and make it happen too quickly. And these dudes that are in the heavyweight ranks right now, they're very big, and David Haye does not look to me like he's naturally big enough to be with them. And at the same time, he's not a Chris Bird, you know, he's not a real slick boxer. And so I'd hate to see him go in there again, say like a Maskayev or somebody, and get knocked out, you know, before he really has a sense of how he needs to alter his style to deal with the size of some of these cats that he's going to fight.
Yeah, it's almost like you have this, everyone knows he's a star in the making, and one bad matchup can throw that all out of whack. You mentioned the comments Calzaghe made with regards to Haye, and like you said, obviously his father trained McAnally, so he'll, you know, be sort of favoring one side. But my imaginary producer gave me the comments, so I'll just share them. He said that Haye did nothing for me to change my views on him. It wasn't his performance that counted. It was Enzo's performance. He was only as good as Enzo made him look. And then blah, 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 saying that, you know, he only threw 4 punches and basically saying that he wasn't really impressed and he should rethink his move up up to heavyweight. So take that for what it is. And you talk about Calzaghe, you know, there's Boxing After Dark this weekend, but really the next two big fights, we kind of get a breather from like 5 straight weeks of, you know, awesome fights, except for that one Klitschko, but the buildup was pretty solid. And then on April 12th, there's obviously Miguel Cotto and Alfonso Gomez. And then on April 19th, Calzaghe Hopkins. So in just a couple of words right now, you know, almost a month before those big bouts, how are you liking, you know, or who are you favoring for those two?
Well, let me say, first of all, just to throw in a plug for this weekend, because I like the fights this weekend. Casamayor Katsidis on HBO Boxing After Dark. It's a lightweight fight that suddenly adds some real interest to it after Juan Diaz's pretty big upset to Nate Campbell. Casamayor is the lineal lightweight champion right now, beating the late Diego Corrales for that And Katsidas is just, you know, now that John Duddy's star seems to have plummeted, Katsidas really seems like the fighter on the scene who is the true heir to the Arturo Gatti Blood and Guts title. Fought some amazing fights last year. So that's a real contrast of style. Casamayor, a pretty slick boxer, also 36 years old. You know, Katsidas seems like he's a real star in the making. That's an interesting fight, not only for the fight itself, which I do think is going to be a good fight, but for all sorts of potential future bouts. British superstar right now, emerging superstar Amir Khan, involved in that whole conversation too. Then you also have this kid, you know, on Friday Night Fights, and people should just know ESPN2 Friday Night Fights, Andy Lee, fighting on Friday Night. Big prospects just signed with Top Rank, Manny Stewart's favorite fighter in his stable. Manny Stewart's talked a lot about how Andy Lee could beat Kelly Pavlik right now. Andy Lee's an Irish fighter, southpaw, and one thing you cannot argue about Andy Lee, you know, it's hard to say how good he is right now. He's only fought 15 pro fights, but he knocks people out in stunning fashion. So I would tune in to Friday Night Fights and check him out. You might see something pretty exciting. Cota Gomez, you know, that's a walkover fight. That's a soft touch fight for Cota that he certainly earned. I'm more interested to see whether the rumors that Cota's going to fight Mayorga in the summer and not Margarito are going to be confirmed anytime soon. That's certainly the rumor that's out there in the air right now. Margarito Cintron, definitely an interesting fight. A lot at stake for both guys. Cintron, just relevance at all. You know, Cintron beats Margarito, he's back in the conversation at 147. If he doesn't, he is a forgotten man. Meanwhile, Margarito, with everything that's happened in that division right now, with the Cotto fight up in the air, it seems like even before he steps in the ring, boy, does he have a lot to prove. And going in, a conclusive knockout for Margarito definitely makes a mandate for him to fight somebody of importance, you know, next. I would imagine that, you know, Margarito's got this whole big thing going, and I think that this is really what it's about, that he's going to take out Puerto Rico this year, you know, and Cintron, and then Quintana, and then Cotto. So presuming it looks like Quintana's going to fight a rematch with Paul Williams, I have a feeling that what they're trying to do with Cotto's year is let him fight Mayorga in the summertime. Let that be his big Madison Square Garden, Puerto Rican Day Parade, you know, time fight, which would be a huge draw, you know, no matter what, you know, Mayorga's just that guy. He wears the black hat, you know, he's going to draw a lot of people. Let Margarito beat Cintron, let him beat, if you know, Quintana, which most people think that he would, and then have the big Mexican Puerto Rican fight that would maybe be pay-per-view level. I think that would be a pay-per-view fight if that all happened according to plan in the fall for Cotto. So that's what I see being at stake that night. Hopkins Calzaghe, boy, you know, boy, that's a long conversation. That fight, long conversation. Not quite as interesting a conversation either as I think some people want it to be. But as it gets closer, we'll talk about it. Right now, look. Right now, I think the most interesting thing I have to say about that fight is last time I looked, which is probably a couple of days ago, I think I saw that Bernard's paying 240 on 100. That right? I'm trying to think of it. I look at a lot of gambling odds, but I think that's what it was, 240 on 100. That's a bigger underdog than I would have thought he'd be, you know?
I don't even know. I really don't even know what that means, but it sounds like a big... I have no idea anything about
it. It means that if you bet $100 on Bernard, you win. It's like it's over 2-1 odds.
Oh, really?
It means that you know, you look at it and it'd be plus 240, minus 240. That's what it means. You know, it means that if you bet $100 on Bernard, you'd win $240 if you won. That's putting Bernard as a surprising underdog to me. I can't imagine that's going to stick for too long.
All right, so
Bernard's a cagey fighter, man. I think Calzaghe's got everything he needs to beat him, but Bernard's got a lot of ideas in there of how to eke out a win. There's no doubt about it.
Do you, I was actually looking at Dan Raphael's pound for pound list, and I'm not, you know, saying that he is the end all be all of you know, who should be on, you know, the top 10 fighter list, but he had Bernard at something like number 4, and I was just wondering,
I was just wondering if
you still you know, held him in such high regard now, and I know he's, you know, from your area, the Philly area, but do you still consider him that much of a, you know, dominant fighter?
Well, it's tough with Bernard, you know, because no, I don't. But at the same time, I'm not sure that that's fair, because as I was just saying, anybody in Bernard's weight range that he fights is going to have a tough time beating him, because he is really, really slick, and he knows every trick in the trade, and he's not that much fun to watch anymore, I don't think. Although it was certainly fun to watch him beat the crap out of Antonio Tarver. You know what I mean? Like, if somebody doesn't show up against Bernard, he'll still give him a beating. But like, I could see Kelly Pavlik having a tough time with Bernard. You know what I mean? Because Bernard just, he knows a lot of ways to win. So having him for, you know, number 4 pound for pound, I mean, that's insane. You got to have Floyd, Pacquiao, the Marquez brothers. It's tough for me to imagine him there, but the pound for pound thing is such a ridiculous debate. I mean, at this point, I get a lot of flack because I pretty much put Cotto up in the Pacquiao Floyd level on the pound for pound, and I get boxing fanatics all the time. So you got to be kidding me! Cotto hasn't earned that. You know, as far as I'm concerned, it's a "what have you done for me lately" kind of bag. And Cotto beating Zab and then Sugar Shane, he's undefeated. I think he belongs up at that level. I only bring that up to say that the pound for pound thing is such a bunch of crap. Everybody's got a different thing. I think Ring Magazine still has Floyd undisputed pound for pound, but somebody I recently saw, one of the big sites now has Pacquiao and Floyd as their co pound for pound champions, which I thought was interesting.
All right, Lars. Well, great stuff. I mean, you really set up the next three or so weeks for us with the Boxing After Dark, Andy Lee, which, my mistake for not talking more about Andy Lee. I've been meaning to ask you about him for a while just because of Emmanuel Stewart loving him so much. But, you know, as always, great insight. And I love the fact that we got some wrestling talk in there at the top. But enjoy the fights. And again, you can catch Lars' amazing work over at nomads-nyc.com. as well as sportingblog.com. Thanks a lot, Lars.
Yeah, thank you, Francesco.